And welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight, brought to you from the studios of Noongar Radio here in Perth in Beaufort Street. Good to have your company for the next hour. For those listening in and around Perth, Perth was battered by storms overnight. Lots of power outages out this morning around Perth and surrounds, but all back to usual, business as usual. So good to have your company. Hope you can stay with us. For news readers, and even if you weren't, you may have heard about some incredible coverage that came out this week through Guardian Australia. Research that some of their journalists did into Aboriginal deaths in custody over the past 10 years. Journalists had tried to find specific stats relating to deaths in custody and found that not all matched up with what they could get their hands on. So they thought the only way they were going to actually do something to find out more specifically what those stats were was to research and compile them themselves. That is exactly what's happened, and Guardian Australia has examined the circumstances of every Indigenous death in custody over the past 10 years and compared Indigenous and non-Indigenous deaths over a five-year period, and the results show stark differences in the treatment that Aboriginal people receive. So I'm going to chat with one of the journalists today who is involved in that research. Calla Walquist joins us. She's in Melbourne and will be chatting with us very soon. This is the Law Matters program brought to you fortnightly by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour, and our focus for the program this fortnight is Aboriginal deaths in custody. The lack of reliable statistics was a recurring theme of the 1991 Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. Recommendation 41 called for the states and territories to maintain a statistical database tracking all deaths in custody and report annually to Parliament. Well, getting hold of those stats and making it a comprehensive list was proving very difficult, and Guardian Australia have taken it upon themselves to do some research, and as a result this week have released a very comprehensive database covering Aboriginal Australian deaths in custody over the last 10 years. One of the reporters who worked on that research is Calla Walquist, and she joins me on the line from Melbourne. Calla, thanks for your time. How are you?
I'm not bad, Jodie. How are you going?
I'm good. Look, I know that the coverage that came out through Guardian Australia this week has been seen by thousands of people, but let's go back to the beginning and why you actually felt it was important that, as journalists, you had to dig around and do the research yourself to find the correct stats.
Yeah, look, we did it because we couldn't find the information that we were looking for. It started over in WA end of 2015 when we were covering the inquest into the death in custody of Yamatji woman Miss Dew, and we were trying to figure out how many Indigenous people had died in custody since the end of the Royal Commission, and we just couldn't find the figures anywhere. The Australian Institute of Criminology does run a monitoring program, produces statistical reports, but they're often a couple of years out of date, usually 2 or 3 years out of date, so we thought we're probably going to have to do this research ourselves.
I imagine it's not a quick task to go ahead getting hold of data like that, because it would be sourced from a range of areas, wouldn't it?
Yeah, look, it took us a couple of months. Actually, the University of Queensland did a similar project looking at all deaths in custody, not just Indigenous deaths, and it took them 3.5 years, I think, and they had 27 law students. So I think we did pretty good with 4 reporters and, 2.5 months. But we read all the coronial files that were relevant to the periods we were looking at in every state and territory. We also contacted the police and corrections departments from every state and territory to get their numbers. A lot of them weren't able to give us those figures. And then we also based a lot of our information on more recent deaths, people who hadn't yet gone to inquest, on news reports, on press releases that we had, and also on working with groups like First Nations Deaths in Custody Watch in Western Australia, who were able to let us know if we'd missed any cases that we should be aware of.
Calla, from an emotional perspective, that must have been an incredibly gruelling task, going over all of those coronial reports for the past decade.
Yeah, look, they're not easy things to read, particularly when you read so many of them and you just see the same trends coming up over and over again and similar recommendations being made over successive years, and think, maybe these recommendations have been implemented, or maybe the lessons had been learnt from this previous inquest and we wouldn't be having this subsequent inquest into yet another death in custody. But we have a really good supportive relationship between our colleagues at Guardian Australia, and also working with Lorena Allam, who's our Indigenous Affairs Editor, was really great. We were able to handle some of that heavy material a bit more easily.
I obviously haven't read all of the database yet. It's very comprehensive, and it lists it state by state. And, of course, unfortunately, WA stats are right up there. But I noticed that with a lot of the people who have died in custody, photos are used of the deceased person. But I'm imagining that the protocols that you've learned along the way or already knew were in place to ensure that correct cultural protocols were followed in naming and photographing of the people, yeah?
Yeah, look, we really wanted this to be a resource that people were able, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people were able to use, and so that meant that we were very conscious that we didn't want to break any cultural protocols. There's only two photos, I think there are maybe two or three photos in the database. Every single photo that's in the database, we've contacted the families of those people, and they've explicitly given us permission for this database. So even if there are people whose photos we've used in the past for other news stories, if they didn't give us new permission just for this database, then we've not used it. We've used the names of people where we've spoken to the families in the past or for this database, and they've explicitly said, yes, this is the name that we would like you to use. Otherwise, we've just used initials because we thought that was really the most respectful thing to do. But we do invite family members of anyone who has died in custody, whose loved one is on the database, or even if they're not on the database, to get in contact with us and let us know, you know, if we've used initials for your loved one. Is there a naming protocol that you'd prefer that we use? You know, is the information that we've got accurate to your experience? We really want to be able to grow this database. And we're also really conscious that often what we're relying on for most of these entries is the coronial findings. And I know, having sat in on a couple of inquests, that the coronial findings are often not what the family agrees with. Mm. And so if there are, you know, big ongoing concerns for families, we want to know that, and we want to be able to put that in the database.
And we should remind our listeners that a death in custody isn't just a death, and I don't mean just a death in terms of the way that sounds, but it's not just a death that occurs in prison, is it?
No, it's quite a broad definition. We adopted the definition that was used in the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Death in Custody, which is a death that occurs in a prison setting while a person's in prison custody, but in a hospital setting, while a person's in police custody in a hospital setting or in a watch house, while a person is escaping or attempting to escape custody, and while a person is under arrest or during arrest or just in the presence of police officers. That includes things like police pursuits. Our figures are slightly broader than the figures that are collected by the Australian Institute of Criminology, because when we were looking at police pursuits, we decided to include any person who died in the same sort of period of driving as a police pursuit or an attempt by police to ask them to pull over, because often when we were reading those coronial files, it was clear that the manner of driving of the person driving the car in which someone died was often influenced by the fact that police had interacted with them at some point in the period of driving, even if the pursuit had officially ended before the crash happened. And that's particularly relevant to Western Australia, because a significant number of the police pursuits that we found that ended with a fatal crash were in Western Australia.
All right, my guest is Calla Walquist from Guardian Australia about the report and research and database released this week through The Guardian on Aboriginal deaths in custody, revealing that 147 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have died in custody in the past decade, and 407 have died since the end of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody in 1991. Calla, let's talk about Western Australia. I know that this state has a lot to hang its head in shame about. Let's talk WA stats.
Right. Look, a lot of the figures that we got, we kept at a national level only because some of the numbers that we were dealing with were quite low. But in Western Australia and New South Wales and Queensland and Victoria, we do have an sort of sadly have enough figures that we can actually talk about those sort of figures without them becoming too statistically insignificant, I suppose. So we had more than 40 of the deaths on our database are from people who have died in custody in Western Australia. I do need to add as a disclaimer at that point that that could be because we had more community help in Western Australia than we had in other states. So it's possible that we're more aware of more recent deaths that haven't yet gone to inquest in Western Australia than we are in other states. But so we had more than 40 deaths in Western Australia. In terms of some of the key data points that we looked at, we decided to measure whether or not all of the available procedures had been followed in every single death in custody. So that's whether or not, from anything as small as whether or not cell checks have been actually recorded in the custody logs that police and prison officers keep, or you know, to much more serious things like had pursuit procedures been followed correctly. And in Western Australia, we found that 31% of deaths in custody occurred in circumstances where procedures hadn't been followed, and it was higher than every other state except the Australian Capital Territory and Tasmania, and we should probably exclude those figures because the ACT and Tasmania both had so few deaths in custody that those figures are not really robust for those states. So Western Australia had the highest number of cases where procedures weren't followed. We also tracked whether or not someone required additional medical care that they weren't given. So in a case where someone gets medical care, often the coroner will find that they should have received additional medical care. And the case, the example here would be Miss Dew, again, who obviously did receive some medical care. She was taken to hospital twice before she passed, but doctors failed to check her temperature and they failed to do another number of other checks that could have provided life-saving information. So when we say medical care required, not given, that's the kind of thing we're talking about. And in 20.5% of cases in Western Australia, that was the case. There was additional medical care that wasn't provided. In that case, WA is actually doing pretty well on a national level. The Northern Territory and New South Wales both had higher rates of medical care that was required and not given. If we're looking particularly at police pursuits in Western Australia, 36% of police pursuits occurred in circumstances where police didn't follow all their procedures.
What official feedback have you had from different departments in relation to the database that you have released, Carla?
None from Western Australia. We contacted every single corrections and police department in Australia on Thursday last week, provided them with a summary of our findings and our methodology and said, look, this is what we found with regards to your agency's involvement. Could you provide us with a comment? And we haven't actually had a lot of states departments respond to us. West Australian Department of Corrective Services and WA Police are among those that haven't actually got back to us yet. But the responses that we've got have, they're all available on the Deaths Inside database. There's a little button that says official statements. But
I did look at that. There wasn't many official statements there.
No, there's not many, and they're not particularly effusive. They don't really, they're quite general statements. They're not really addressing the trends that we found necessarily.
And I'm looking at that now. You've got, you know, the Australian Institute of Criminology, the Queensland Police Service, New South Wales Police, Corrective Services, New South Wales, Tasmania Police, Corrections Victoria, Victoria Police, but nothing at all from Western Australia. How did that make you feel after all the work that has gone into compiling this that you would hope would be for the benefit of not only Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island peoples, obviously, but key stakeholders working within the justice system?
It's possibly a bad thing to say, but I wasn't terribly surprised. We contacted every police and corrections department also in May this year, asking for their most recent figures on deaths in custody, and some were able to help. Western Australian Police was one that was able to provide us with quite detailed information, but other agencies around the country, including the West Australian Department of Corrective Services, weren't able to provide us or just didn't provide us with that information. So I'm sure that you'll be aware, and I'm sure your listeners will be aware, that you know this is an issue where it's actually quite difficult to get official attention on it. I am not terribly surprised that the agencies haven't really engaged with this project and with this database. One of the reasons that we're doing this database is because the Australian Institute of Criminology has also had difficulties getting its official figures from states and territories. The reason that the report was, there was a three-year gap between the last two AIC reports on deaths in custody rather than a two-year gap, is because states and territories weren't even providing their figures to the official compiler of those figures, which they are legally obligated to do. So I'm not overly surprised that they've not really been responding to us.
My guest is Calla Walquist from Guardian Australia, and she and colleagues from The Guardian have spent the last few months compiling information and a database in relation to Aboriginal deaths in custody over the last 10-year period. The database is extremely comprehensive, has information on specific cases along with photos where permission has been granted. But let's run through the database and what people can expect. And we should warn people as well that, you know, if you do click on this database, there is going to be some very distressing details that you will come across, hey?
Yeah, look, there is a lot of quite confronting information, and we have set it up though so that you can't, even if someone provides a link directly to the database, you can't actually click through without reading the warning that there will be distressing information. So hopefully we have set it up so people won't be unexpectedly confronted by it. They should have the option to read it or not to read it, but we've written descriptions of all of the cases in the database, and they do make for quite confronting reading.
And the database, you know, it includes things from medical issues to drug and alcohol toxicity, medical issues, as was the case that you raised with Ms. Dew, the tragic case that touched the hearts of us all, not only in Australia but internationally. Breakdowns by states. Each state is colour-coded, so if you're actually looking for something in Victoria or Queensland, you can just go to that colour code but read more about those specific cases. What's going to happen with this research now? Because obviously there was a commitment made that this deaths in custody would be monitored back in 1991, with the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. Has it re-engaged departments to ensure that ongoing monitoring does occur?
That's certainly our aim, and it has certainly engaged a number of federal politicians who've got in contact with us and said that they are going to pursue this issue of monitoring. Among those, Senator Pat Dodson has said that he will be pursuing the issue of more regular monitoring. The Australian Institute of Criminology, which does the official monitoring in a de-identified statistical manner, has recently said that it will produce its reports every 12 months as opposed to every 2 to 3 years, which is a great, that's a great increase. In terms of our database particularly, we will continue to update it for a considerable period. We'll keep adding more information both about deaths that have occurred in the past that we don't have in our database. There's a number of these cases where the inquest is pending. We will be updating those as we go, and also if we sadly hear of any more deaths in custody in the future, we will be updating those. And it's our intention that this site will continue even if we are no longer able to update it. We're in discussions with a couple of Indigenous-run organisations who are interested in continuing to maintain this site in perpetuity, so this resource always remains available.
How dismayed were you the more you delved into the deaths in custody over the past years, when it obviously would have become apparent that many of those deaths were unnecessary tragedies?
Yeah, look... there are a couple of cases in particular. I mean, there's always, it's difficult to sort of highlight any particular case as being, worse than all others. Every death in custody is a tragedy, and so many of these deaths were, unnecessary. There's a couple of cases from Western Australia in particular that I, that were particularly distressing to read. One is of a young 13-year-old girl who died in a low-speed police pursuit in Port Hedland in 2010. And in that case, the coroner actually commented, to police that she wanted them to think about whether, is a stolen motor vehicle, without any other known risk factors involved, worth a life. Another case that I looked at from Western Australia concerned a man who had heart disease, and he eventually died from that heart disease, but the prison medical records between the prison in Perth that he'd spent time in and a prison in regional Western Australia that he'd spent time in didn't share any didn't appear to share the information that was required. So his doctors in both prisons were effectively working at cross purposes. One was trying to investigate possible heart disease. Mm-hmm. One was trying to treat obesity and telling him to exercise. And he slightly misunderstood the instruction for light exercise and joined the footy team and then had a heart attack on the footy field. Like, it's just... it's quite distressing the number of these cases that you see turn on very, very small choices made on behalf of custodial officers who are often, you know, acting with their best intentions but are rushed or don't necessarily have an adequate cultural competency to understand what Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander prisoners are telling them or are just acting within the confines of their institution, which might have certain, you know, expectations practices in place, and those little small decisions just add up and it results in someone dying prematurely.
Absolutely tragic. Kayla, we'll let you go soon, but as a journalist, I'm sure it does have an impact on you and the others who were involved in this research, and unfortunately it's a living fact in the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples that, if not directly, many of us are indirectly affected by the loss of a loved one through deaths in custody, and unfortunately the statistics don't look like slowing down. I would hope that research like this does bring it back to the top of the table for attention, and where are you hoping that it will lead to now that this research is out there?
Look, the first thing that we're really, really hoping will come out of it is we'll finally get to the point where we have custody notification services enshrined in legislation in every state and territory in Australia. I know Western Australia, the West Australian government has agreed to the federal government's funding offer for CNS for 3 years. It'll be run through the ALS. You'd probably know more about that than me, but I know that that's happening. I know the Northern Territory has also agreed. Victoria is doing it on its own without federal funding because it already had a sort of similar model that was in place but just not actually in legislation. They're going to legislate that. But that's one thing that we're really pushing for because that's such an obvious and relatively legislatively simple action to take. So we're really pushing for that as the first thing we're pushing for, and we're also pushing for the Australian Law Reform Commission report, which handed down its final report to the Attorney-General in December of last year, made a number of recommendations for reducing Indigenous incarceration, and as we know from the Royal Commission, the way that you reduce deaths in custody is you reduce the number of people in custody. So we're also really pushing for the federal government to actually formally commit to responding to the recommendations of that report.
In reading the 463 coronial reports, Guardian Australia found a record of systemic failure. It's certainly not light reading, but who would you think would get benefit out of picking up these stats and having a look through the database?
Look, we've already been contacted by a number of researchers and academics who are working in this space who've said that they will be using this database, and also asked if we might be able to share some of our de-identified data. We're sort of considering working our way through the ethical problems of that, but we do want to be able to help researchers in this space. We've also been contacted by a number of lawyers who said that they might be able to use this resource. But also, I know that a lot of people, after they lose someone in this case, do kind of almost get pushed into activism. And we are hoping that, you know, for those people, if they are trying to find some information, they are trying to find cases that are similar to what happened to their loved one, it's really difficult. We wouldn't encourage anyone to read anything that would be, you know, re-traumatising for them. But hopefully if someone is trying to find information about similar cases to something that happened to a loved one or someone that they know, this resource is something that people can use. They can search at the top of the database for certain key terms, and it might hopefully prevent people from sort of fruitlessly spending hours and hours and hours on the internet trying to find the information that they need.
Well, you guys have done an incredible job in compiling the database. How can people have a look at it?
If you can go to theguardian.com, you'll see it on the front page of the Guardian's website, and you can just click through on Destin's side, look at the beautiful art drawn by Wiradjuri artist Charlotte Allingham, and you'll be able to have a look through there.
All right, Callet, great to chat with you, and well done to all the journalists. It's pretty much above and beyond what you would expect for when you're going through your journalism course at university. But this research, I'm sure, is going to have long-standing effects for many, many people and organisations, and make sure that that correct reporting gets back on track as it was meant to be back in 1991 with the launch of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody report. So thank you for chatting with us a bit more about it, and if people want more information, just head to The Guardian. Callet Walquist, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, and thanks for all the families who spoke to us and agreed to let us share their stories.
Definitely. Callet Walquist from Guardian Australia. So an incredible database that they have set up covering deaths in custody of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples for the last 10 years. And lots of coverage and public comment around that. So just jump on Google and check it, and it won't take you very long at all to find your way to that database and the associated stories. This is Law Matters, and we'll see what the Human Rights Law Centre and also the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services have said about that research coming out this week as well, very shortly here on Law Matters. Jodie Hoffman with you, and the focus of our program this hour is, of course, Aboriginal deaths in custody. And the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA this week endorsed a statement that was released this week by the NATSLS, which is the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services. And they are the national peak body for ALSs around the country. And they've called for a national rollout of mandatory custody notification services in response to the alarming findings from the Guardian Australia's Deaths Inside project. The Guardian reviewed deaths in custody since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody that uncovered that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are dying in custody from treatable medical conditions but are much less likely than non-Indigenous people to receive the care they need. Police watch houses, prisons and hospitals are failing to follow their own procedures. Mental health and cognitive impairment is a large factor in deaths, and families are waiting for up to 3 years for an inquest. Cheryl Axelby is the co-chair of the NATSLS, and she said, a generation on from the Royal Commission, 407 Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people have died in the care of governments. These are our elders, our mothers, fathers, children, cousins, uncles and aunties, taken from us too soon. Too many of these deaths were preventable. With the flick of a pen, governments could easily save lives with this simple solution: fund and legislate mandatory custody notification services in every state and territory, said Cheryl Axelby, the co-chair of NATSLS. Custody notification services provide 24-hour, 7-day-a-week telephone legal advice services to our mob who have been detained in police custody. The lawyer will provide the Aboriginal accused with culturally safe legal advice specific to their circumstances, and will also inquire as to their health and mental health to ensure that appropriate medical assistance is provided. The Australian Law Reform Commission recently recommended that Commonwealth, state and territory governments should introduce a statutory custody notification service requiring police to contact an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander legal service as soon as possible after an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person is detained in custody for any reason. Custody notification services run by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander legal services save lives. We know it works. Governments must develop and fund custody notification services in partnership with us before any more grief, pain and loss is inflicted on our communities. That's a statement released 28th of August by NATSLS, the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, in response to some of the findings from The Guardian's research and database into Aboriginal deaths in custody over the past 10 years. Let's have some more music right after this promo from Nerelda Jacobs.
Hello, this is Nerelda Jacobs from Network 10, and you're listening to 100.9 FM Noongar Radio.
We're just about out of time here on Law Matters for another fortnight, but in a release this week by the Human Rights Law Centre, They stated that Australian governments must put in place life-saving custody notification services in every state and territory to address one of the most significant human rights issues in Australia, the preventable deaths in custody of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. The Guardian Australia, as we spoke about earlier on the program, revealed this week that 147 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have died in custody in the past decade, and 407 have died since the end of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody in 1991. Shalina Musk is a senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre, and she said that this shameful number will continue to rise while Australian governments fail to bring in life-saving measures like a custody notification service. She stated, "We know that the lives and safety of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples can be placed at risk in police custody. One call to an Aboriginal-led service could change that. 27 years ago, the Royal Commission recommended that. 27 years later, we're still faced with politicians dragging their feet while people continue to die." Custody notification systems require police to contact an Aboriginal legal service whenever an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person is taken into police custody, a key recommendation of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody. Custody notification services ensure a person is checked for both legal and welfare needs, and to date, only New South Wales has properly implemented this service. 6 months ago, the Australian Law Reform Commission also confirmed this as a key recommendation, in addition to 35 comprehensive reforms to address the over-imprisonment of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, including to abolish mandatory sentencing, stop imprisoning people for unpaid fines, fix bail and sentencing laws so that a person's cultural experience can be taken into account, and increase access to culturally appropriate community-based alternatives. Shalina Musk said that these recommendations, and in particular the call for a fully funded and legislated custody notification services, should be actioned immediately. "There is no room for mandatory sentencing in a modern and fair justice system. Every single government in Australia can today choose to cut the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people being forced into prison by wiping these unfair laws from their statute books," she said. 4 years ago, Ms. Jew, a young Yamaji woman, died in police custody because she couldn't pay some fines. Today, the WA government continues to put people's lives at risk by using prisons and police watch houses to further punish and lock up vulnerable people. Nobody should be locked up simply because they are poor," said Shalina Musk from the Human Rights Law Centre. Shalina is a senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre, and a few years ago was a lawyer with our mob at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. So strong comments coming out this week from the Human Rights Law Centre, as well as the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, in response to the research and database put out publicly by The Guardian Australia this week. Some very difficult areas to talk about, but important to keep a profile on this to ensure that deaths in custody hopefully one day becomes a thing of the past. If you do need any support in any way, legal, or want to know where to go for different support on justice issues in this state, the Aboriginal Legal Service has a free call number, 1800 019 900, 1800 019 900. We also have a Facebook page, Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia Limited, and we can offer services in not just criminal law, but also human rights and advocacy, community legal education, family law. So do feel free to check out our website as well, or our Facebook page, or give us a call. That number again, 1800 019 900, if we can assist you with that legal support or representation, or in fact steering you in the right direction of other support services that might be able to assist you. Let's head off on our program today by listening to the beautiful sound of Jimmy Little. This is a song called The Way I Made You Feel. Take care until we're back with you next time. This is all from the Aboriginal Legal Service Law Matters program.